Anyway, look, to answer, it's a good question. Why are we doing a sermon on leadership? It's a good question. To answer it, I would say two things. And for the Dr. Seuss fans, I'm going to call them thing one and thing two. Thing one is that even if you're not an elder, parts of this passage still apply directly to you. You see, the section we're focusing on in this passage has things to say to all Christians. It's very important we understand this. But thing two, I would say, is that this passage is talking about elders in the plural. You see, Titus was not to go around and appoint an elder in each town and church. He was to appoint elders in each town and church. The idea that a church has one elder doing all the work, it's not biblical. Right? So even though you have a new senior minister and two assistants, there are still to be elders appointed from within the congregation. We have a number of those. There are people like our Bible study leaders, our youth group leaders, our ministry leaders, our service leaders, our wardens to a slightly lesser extent, and our mentors. So please don't underestimate the importance of and the relevance of this passage to us as a church here today. Now, the majority of the time we're going to spend today is going to be in verses 5 to 9, looking at what elders do. While verses 1 to 4 are rich in content, we just lack the time. We'd be here a couple of hours. But verses 5 to 9 is where it's at for today, and we're going to be looking at two things. Number one, we're going to be seeing what an elder does. And the second thing we're going to do is how that affects the rest of us, how that their important role affects all of us. But before we dive in, how about we ask for God's help? Will you please pray with me? Our gracious God, as we open your word today, we ask that you will grant us open ears, sharp minds, and soft hearts. Show us not just what good leadership looks like, but what good Christians look like. Amen. Well, look, after his initial greeting, the Apostle Paul, in verses 1 to 4, the Apostle Paul reminds his recipient, which is Titus, of his important task. Pick it up at verse 5. The reason I left you in Crete was that you might straighten out what was left unfinished and appoint elders in every town as I directed you. So Titus's job in Crete, Crete's this little Mediterranean island, his job there was to straighten out something. Now, that phrase literally means to put in order that which is out of order. To put in order that which is out. And order is important, isn't it? Having just moved house, one of the first things you do when you move in is you figure out where everything's going to go, don't you? You put your house in order. Take the kitchen, for example. You don't go around putting one plate in every cupboard, do you? You don't put, you know, the little saucepan in one cupboard down there and the big saucepan all the way in the other cupboard over the other side of the kitchen, do you? Kitchens work better when the crockery and the glassware and the saucepans all have their own place. Works better if there's order. And it's the same with the church. An ordered church works better, doesn't it? And the way you put a church in order is by appointing leadership, or as the Bible calls them, elders. Pastoral oversight is of vital importance to a church. Jesus never planned to leave his sheep without shepherds. Shepherds is how you order the church. The shepherds keep the flock in order. And the way they do this, the way they order the church, is through three tasks. And these three tasks make up the job description of an elder. And Paul outlines these three tasks in verses 5 to 9, or particularly 6 to 9, which we're going to look at now. Look at these three tasks. You can see it on your sermon outline as well. But to help the visual learners, like myself, I've coloured them differently. So the first one we're going to look at is that an elder is to be a role model. This is the stuff in blue. Good leaders lead by example, don't they? I had a bad manager when I was at Toyota. He lived by under the principle of do what I say, not what I do. He was a bad manager. Good leaders lead by example. They are not. And elders are to provide a godly example of what Christians should look like. And so the vast majority of this passage, as you can see, has to do with godliness. So let's have a look at what elders are to be role models in. So first, verse 6, an elder is to be blameless. Now what does that mean? Does it mean sinless? Well, if it did, we wouldn't have any elders, would we? Elders are sinful just like anyone else. Now, blameless has to do with our public reputation, one's public reputation. Do they have a reputation for being, well, problematic or crass, or do they have a good public reputation? For those who were here at my ordination, you may recall, it's a bit of a blur for me, but you may recall Bishop Forsyth asking the congregation if they knew of any reason why I shouldn't be ordained. It's like that time in the marriage ceremony. Does anyone know why this man and this woman should not be married? You know, the couple turn around sort of half in trepidation, half in, you know, there's the stoop, you better not say anything. That was me on two Fridays ago. But elders are to have a good public reputation. They are to be blameless. Next, still in verse 6, an elder is to be the husband of but one wife, or very literally, a one-womaned man. A one-woman man. Now, the question that has plagued the church down the ages is, who exactly is Paul trying to exclude from eldership with the phrase one-woman man? Well, basically, it's anyone who is not a good role model in the area of marriage. Right? It's all about being a role model. Polygamists, for example, excluded. Right? Having an extramarital affair, that will exclude you. Those elders who are not yet married, still single, they need to remain sexually pure until they're married. If they're not, they're not a one-woman man, are they? And finally, divorce, I think, places a very big question mark over one's suitability. Doesn't necessarily rule someone out, I don't think. I'm still thinking about that, but I think it places a big question mark over it. But I'm happy to talk more about that can of worms privately after the service if you'd like. But moving on, Paul then gives a list of five vices in verse 7. And these are common temptations for those in leadership. Elders, to start with, are not to be overbearing, right? Or as the ESV puts it, not to be arrogant, you know, my way or the highway. Elders are not to be quick-tempered with people, regardless of how annoying the parishioner might be. Elders are not to get drunk, okay? Alcohol does not solve problems. It usually just compounds them. Elders are not to exert their power through violence, whether it be physical or verbal or emotional. It was Jesus who said in Matthew 20, it's the worldly leaders that lord it over those under them, not so with godly leaders. What do godly leaders do? They serve. And then fifthly, elders are not to be greedy. They are to put aside the worldly pursuits for money and possessions. Well, after the five vices, we're flying through this, comes six virtues in verse 8. Again, related to their job description. Just quickly, elders are to be hospitable. All right. This doesn't just mean entertaining church members. The Greek word there literally means to love strangers. To love strangers. Second, elders are to love what is good. Not just strangers, but love what is good. They are to be charitable as opposed to immoral. Elders are to be self-controlled. Right? Before you can be put in control of a church, you need to learn to control yourself. Elders are to be upright. That means dealing with people in an honest manner. Elders are to be holy, devout in their attitude with God. And sixthly, elders are to be disciplined, which is closely related to being self-controlled. Now, here's the thing. When I look at this list, the thing I find truly remarkable about it is how unremarkable it is. That is not that surprising a list, is it? I mean, you know, look at it. Not arrogant, not drunk, not violent, rather hospitable, self-controlled, holy, This here is baseline, run-of-the-mill godliness, isn't it? Paul is not saying that elders need to be standout, sort of remarkable in their godliness. What he's saying is if they're going to be encouraging others in this kind of godliness, they've got to have it first. They've got to be under control in this area. And so, like I said in the intro, this list here applies to all Christians, doesn't it? This is standard godliness. So let me ask you, as our first point of application this morning, how's your godliness going? Are you blameless? Or do you have a reputation of being volatile, abusive, crass, irresponsible? How's your marriage? Are you loving your spouse? Or have you given up on that? Are you arrogant, quick-tempered, drink a lot? Do you treat people roughly? Are you focused on money and possessions? Or do you entertain strangers? Do you love what is good? Are you self-controlled, upright, and holy? Perhaps one or two of these things have pricked your conscience this morning. If so, what are we going to do about it? Well, let me give you an example of what I do when that happens. This is an actual example. Happened to me about 12 or 13 years ago. Okay, so about 12 or 13 years ago, I had a reputation for having a crass sense of humour. All right, I would tell dirty jokes. It's going back a while, but not too long. And a Christian friend pulled me up on it. And I worked my way through four simple steps when he'd pointed out my fault. Now, step one was the normal reaction of cursing him under my breath. You know, how dare he? Who does it? Look at all the planks in his eye, you know? Fortunately, step one did not last for too long for me. After a day or two, I came to my senses and figured out that he was right. And so step two, believe it or not, was that I rejoiced. Okay, now call me weird, right? But like I said last week, I always want to improve in things in life. I'm always wanting to get better. And so here was a challenge for me, all right? And when I see a challenge, right, all right, let's get into it. So I said, let's improve my public reputation in this area. Step three, third thing I did, was I prayed. I pulled in some outside help. I brought in the big guns. That's what we're going to be doing this Tuesday night, isn't it? And then fourthly, I dedicated myself to fixing that area of my life. And get this, with God's help, it took about 3 weeks before I could look back and say, not only was I not telling dirty jokes anymore, I didn't even want to listen to them. I don't even want to listen to dirty jokes anymore. So if your conscience is pricked by one of these things, there's four simple steps. Don't harbour on step one for too long, all right? It's the normal process, though. But pray about it and then joyfully dedicate yourself to being more godly. Well, let's move on. Apart from being a role model, an elder needs to be able to manage a church. Now, what do I mean by that? Let me explain. In verse 6, we're told that an elder must be a man whose children believe and are not open to the charge of being wild and disobedient. Now, what a controversial verse. All right? And the controversy lies in the fact that Paul seems to want to hold elders or ministers accountable for something that is beyond their control. All right? Now, perhaps you already know this, but here's the thing. You and I cannot convert someone to Christianity. We cannot convert someone's heart to Christianity. Only God can do that. Our job is to tell them about Jesus and his death on the cross. All right? It's God's job to change their heart. So why does, well, it's God, it's not just Paul. Why does God seem to require that my kids believe if I can't even control that? Well, I actually don't think he does. And the reason I say that is because the word translated believe in verse 6, more often than not, actually means to be faithful or reliable. Okay, there is another Greek word that he could have used that almost always refers to believing. But the word he chose means faithful or reliable. It's the same word he uses down in verse 9 to talk about the message. It is a trustworthy message, a reliable message. So I actually don't think he's saying that children must believe here. I think he's saying they need to be trustworthy, faithful, reliable. And our thesis is further backed up when we compare this passage to its parallel passage in 1 Timothy chapter 3. So the Apostle Paul told Titus to appoint elders in Crete. He also told Timothy to appoint elders in Ephesus. And in 1 Timothy 3, don't bother looking it up, it's here behind us, he says to Timothy that elders must manage, an elder must manage his own family well and see that his children obey him with proper respect. If anyone does not know how to manage his own family, how can he take care of God's church? So in 1 Timothy 3, there is no mention of an elder's children having to be believers. The reason is that parents can't control that. What they can control is their children's behaviour, can't they? And this is what Paul is getting at. A person's family is the training ground for being an elder. And if someone doesn't know how to manage his own family of four or five people, keep his kids under control, how on earth is he going to know how to manage a church family of 40 or 50 or more? What he's getting at is, elders need to be able to manage people. They need management skills. Now, that's going to incorporate a whole bunch of things. Firstly, just dealing one-on-one with people. But elders are to be the vision casters. All right? They are to put in place systems of care for people. They are to empower the sheep to get involved in ministry. And they're to ensure that all the ministry is directed in a godly and fruitful manner. Elders are managers. Thirdly, the third thing an elder is to teach. And we see this in verse 9. An elder must hold firm to the trustworthy message as has been taught, so he can encourage others by sound doctrine and refute those who oppose it. Now, this is the main job of an elder, okay? To teach sound doctrine. In fact, it's a little more than to teach. You see, Paul uses the word encourage there. Now, for our Greek speakers, the Greek word here is parakalein. That's actually where we get our modern Greek word parakalo from. How's my accent? Parakalo. Right. For those who don't know, parakalo can either mean you're welcome, or it can mean please. So if someone says to you, thank you, you go, parakalo, you're welcome. Or if someone says, do you want chicken salt on your chips? You go, parakalo, please. All right? You can see the loose connection, can't you? I encourage you to put chicken salt on my chips. But that's what he's getting at here, to encourage someone in sound doctrine, not just teach them. And what does that mean? Look, to encourage someone means to be able to inspire them to hold to sound doctrine. It means to be able to motivate them to follow sound doctrine. This is what a good pastor will do. He will feed the sheep. He'll feed the sheep. He also routs the wolves. When you see this in verses 10 to 16, it tells us, this section tells us why elders are so important. It's because there are many wolves. Have a look at verse 10. For there are many rebellious people, mere talkers and deceivers, especially those of the circumcision group. They must be silenced because they are ruining whole households by teaching things they ought not to teach, and that for the sake of dishonest gain. Now, I don't know if there are many deceivers in and around Earlwood who are teaching false things for dishonest gain. All right, very important. Dishonest gain. They're the people you see on TV usually. Send more money, you know. But my understanding is that Earlwood is surrounded by Catholic and Orthodox Christians. These are people who believe things like that icons are a perfectly legitimate form of worship. They believe baptism is necessary for salvation. They believe good works and religious practices contribute to salvation. And they believe the Roman Catholic or the Orthodox Church is the only true church. Now, they are false teachings. They're not biblical. So here's the question. What do we do when we're surrounded by so much false teaching? Well, we do what Paul did. We protect ourselves from wolves by appointing more shepherds. When false teaching multiplied, Paul combated it by multiplying good leaders who taught the truth. That's what we should do. Appoint more shepherds. Now, this is where the congregation comes in. While this passage, and I'm going to be honest, this passage applies primarily to ordained ministers, myself, Steve, Mike. All right? But it also applies, in a lesser extent, I think, to lay leadership. Churches need lay leaders as well. Now, we already have a number of people in eldership roles here. These are our Bible study leaders, our youth group leaders, those who run particular ministries here, those who mentor our younger, less mature Christians. But if we're going to grow, we're going to need more. We're going to need more lay leadership. Now, if EACC is anything like my previous church, getting new people to step up to leadership is a battle, usually among blokes. And that's where we need it the most, I think. Now, it might be that they simply haven't got their godliness down pat yet. But quite often it's to do with, I don't know, laziness, fear, feelings of inadequacy. These all mean that guys are less and less, I guess, more reluctant to step up into these vital roles. But our churches are in desperate need of good male role models, good managers for our ministries, and good teachers. Now, as a newcomer, I don't know who's involved in these ministries. All right? I've only seen a couple of service leaders, a couple of Bible study leaders. But as we grow, we're going to need more service leaders. We're going to need more Bible study leaders. We're going to need more youth group leaders. We're going to need more people for children's church. We're going to need more men to run the men's ministry. We're going to need women to run the women's ministry. We're going to need people to help with our outreach programs. We're going to need both men and women to be mentoring and discipling our younger men and women. So, folks, if you have the godliness and the management skills and the ability to teach that Paul has outlined in this passage, can I encourage you today, consider stepping up into a leadership position where you are needed. You are needed. Now, if you don't know exactly what kind of role, come and talk to the ministry staff. We'll get our heads together and point you in the right direction. But good role models, good managers and good teachers are vitally important to the life of a healthy church. And if EACC is going to continue growing in health, then it's going to need good leadership. Not just ordained leadership, but good lay leadership. We have a well-ordered church here. Let's not get complacent about that. If you are blameless, of good character, EACC needs you in leadership. Food for thought.